Final Play Podcast welcomes you to the following presentation of the NFL. Man, Championship Sunday was just all kinds of crazy.
I think just in general, every playoff game this year has been absolutely insane. Every playoff game. Every single one.
This has just been nuts.
It's been nuts. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. It's NFL. And, I mean, straight off the bat, I mean, speaking of nuts, Tom Brady has now officially, even though Adam Schefter was technically right, officially called his retirement after 22 years of being in the game.
I was so, like, when I first seen it, and then all of a sudden there was conflicting reports out there about Brady and his actual retirement. So I'm just like, oh, did Adam Schefter, did he get another one wrong? Because, you know, Tom Brady's dad actually come out and said that is absolutely false to say that he was retiring. And the funny thing was, you know, 8-9 hours after all these reports had come out to say that Tom Brady hasn't made a decision yet, ESPN and their websites, they weren't walking this back at all. They were absolutely adamant that this was fact.
Every website/sports thing I went on to weren't wanting anything back. They were going with it. They were reporting, obviously, then that it wasn't official, but they weren't having all the litany of all the stats and everything that he's done. That they kept that there and delete them. So, yeah.
I wasn't believing anything. I'm almost still not believing that this has actually happened. I think this is entirely too quick after his season had finished for him to make such a rash decision. He's come out on Instagram. It was on his own podcast, the Let's Go podcast, that he come out and said that he hadn't quite that he hadn't made a decision yet. Like, I can't believe that it's been made a week after his season has finished. I would have thought this would have taken months for him and his family and his team to deliberate and get, you know, a real gauge on how he's feeling. I just feel this is so quick.
I said to you 4 weeks ago that I thought he was going to retire after seeing Man in the Arena and just those little tidbits out there. I said he was going to retire. And there were certain things I said, and which is what I keep reading, and this sort of plays to of why he's probably done it this quick. Firstly, the dude goes to bed at 8:30. Like, he goes to bed no later than 8:30. But all, which is absolutely, I don't know how he does it, which is insane.
I don't know how you do that. Like, you know, I'd like to do that before I go to work each day too, but it just doesn't happen.
But he said, like, you know, this is a lengthy Instagram post, but this job, which it is, this job is for him a 365-day slog a year. It's everything I do every day. It's the eating. It's the sleeping. It's everything that he's routinely done. And he just got to a point where he 22 years, he had to concentrate on something else, and that was his family, which was always the case.
How long until it takes him to get the itch to come back?
I don't think he's that kind of guy. I think he's pretty calculated. I don't think he would come back. I don't think he would be that kind of player. I did read, because of who he is and everything like that, I did read, funnily enough, does he do a Michael Jordan 2 sports sort of thing? Because he is very, very good at golf.
Tony Romo's tried that as well.
He has a handicap of 2. J.R. Smith's trying that at the moment, actually, too.
Yeah, he's doing his stuff through the collegiate level.
He has a handicap of 2, Tom Brady. Honestly, it'd be insane, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did something like that. You probably have to don't do the effort of what he does for football, but I don't know. But his have you seen his stats? His stats are insane. So this is what he ranks first all time in. Wins.
In everything?
Yes. Wins, 243. Pro Bowls, 15. Super Bowl MVP award.
You know, okay, so just before you keep going on there with Pro Bowls, you know when the last time he actually played in a Pro Bowl?
Yeah, when was that?
2005.
And interestingly enough, he was supposed to be in this year's one. He pulled out of this year's one. So
2005 was the last time he actually played in a Pro Bowl.
I bet you he would have got invited to a few and he probably just went, no.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. I think up until I think it was like 5 or 6 years. Oh, I think it might even be longer than that they actually put the Pro Bowl in between the championship week and the Super Bowl, whereas previously it would be after the Super Bowl. It'd and who the hell's going to want to play in the Pro Bowl after the Super Bowl?
Correct. Starts, so official starts, 316. Completion, 7,263. Attempts of throwing, 11,317. Passing
yards.
That's a lot
of work. That's a lot of work on that arm.
Passing yards, 84,520 yards. I know the one that you don't want to hear, but the passing touchdowns, 624, for obvious reasons why you don't want to hear that.
You know, it's funny too. Like he did all this, with more games than what Drew Brees did too. Drew Brees done this in way under the amount of games.
I'm with you. Drew Brees to me was more accurate. He just didn't have longevity. He was definitely more accurate, 100% more accurate. He just didn't have longevity. Three touchdown games, 101. Four touchdown games, 39. In the postseason.
Postseason numbers will be out of control.
Postseason appearances, 19. Games started, 47. Wins, 35. Super Bowl appearances, 10. Super Bowl wins, 7. Completions, 1165. Yards, 13,049. Touchdowns, 86. Game-winning drives, 14. And the one that just absolutely blows me away, fourth quarter comebacks. Nine fourth quarter comebacks. And we know a few of those are actually Super Bowl comebacks, a la the this is to me his biggest moment. That Atlanta game has to be 25 down, has to be his biggest moment of his career. And he would say that. Have to be.
I would think so. That would probably
In the man in the arena, he didn't really touch on what his biggest moment was, probably because he didn't want to throw people off of like, you know, that means I'm going to retire. But, you know, God, he talked up that game at man in the arena, but God damn, he talked up that game.
Well, as you would, like, you know, as you would, like they would have been super deflated at 28-3 down. Oh, 100%, they would have been like, oh, yeah, what is this? And, you know, for them to be able to come back and force overtime and do what they did in that game is just that's unbelievable.
He obviously thanked, you know, his long Instagram post. He obviously thanked a lot of people, the Bucks, his family. Didn't interestingly enough thank anybody specifically in this post in New England.
No, I think he did a separate post for his New England thanks, didn't he?
No, he sort of like that. They Robert Kraft come out and did this.
Robert Kraft has done it. Yeah, he's done a big thing.
And then he's tagged onto that and said, you know, he didn't do it like a lengthy thing. He just said, you know, New England Patriots fans, New England organization, you know how I feel, you know. But wasn't it just like a little bit, not like a long. Yeah. Winded, which is, you know, that could be
thanks for the trophies and thanks for the rings.
That could be just lingering little things too. I don't think he's got any ill feeling, but it's without question he's the greatest of all time. It's without question. I don't think there's any other question about it, is there?
No, well that's right. I heard today he's I think it was on PTI, and they were just going through, you know, like the greats of you know, American sports, you know, team sports. It's Brady, it's MJ, it's Gretzky, it's Willie Mays, it's Babe Ruth. Like that is just the upper echelon of the upper echelon of the upper echelon of players in you know, in the big four sports in the States.
And I hate to say it, but his second wave, you know.
Bill Russell. Bill Russell was the other one.
Well, his second wave is you know, I mean, I love this guy, obviously, but his second wave was better than Jordan's second wave. And we all know that. I mean, that's just the way that is. Like, his second wave of coming back. I'm not comparing him. You can't compare for sports. I'm not comparing him.
You can't go through sports. Like, you know, you can't go on dominance and what they mean and what they have meant.
His biggest thing is that he still retired this game as you know, he was close to being the quarterback one this year. That is probably the biggest difference of him. Whereas Michael, you know, in the Wizards and all that, that was kind of, it's a bit hard and all that. He still did, you know, otherworldly numbers, Jordan, when he was with the Wizards. Like, he was pumping that game. Right. Like Kobe was towards the end there. But Tom was just, like, to get to where, get his team to where they
the
were.
The Wizards weren't winning championships.
Well, that is the difference. Yeah, he'll be eligible for the 2027. He's already been named in the 2027 ballot already. So that's,
yeah, no, that, yeah, they would be printing that out right now, and that, and that's
the, there's calls for him to get put in earlier, but that's just, you can't do that. That's just, that's,
well, then, yeah, well, there'd be two names on it. There'd be him and Ben Roethlisberger.
There'll be, yeah, it's too unfair to put him in earlier. You've got to follow protocols.
You've got to go through the process.
He's the best. Yeah, the other thing I read, which I found hilarious, he's the best, or the greatest sixth round pick of all time. because he is. Oh, that's hilarious. Sixth round.
699. And I guess, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't sort of touch on quickly before we get into the games. And we shouldn't be quickly, really, you know, with Big Ben officially, you know, retiring, where I think it was the worst kept secret that was going around in the league. So yeah, big congrats to Big Ben and, you know, his retirement from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the thing, you know, 18 years in the league, same sort of thing, you know, he's up there on the all time list, you know, in passing touchdowns, in passing yards, things like that, you know, his rookie of the year, he's a 2-time Super Bowl champion, like it's a remarkable career that Big Ben's had.
Yeah, look, he
that 2004 draft was insane with quarterbacks.
His records are definitely nothing to sneeze at. He you know, when he played 249 games with a completion percentage of 64.4, that's pretty, you know, for 18 years, that's very, very rare. Yeah, very exactly. Rare.
64,000 odd plus yards. It's like fifth all time.
64.088. So yeah, like his numbers. You know, he finished with a passer rating. Finished with a passer rating of 93.5. Finished. That's so. And still, look, I don't care what people say. He wasn't gonna be like he was in previous years, but it was between him and Tomlin that got him into the playoffs. Like everybody, I mean, and defense. I'm not going to, they got a great defense, but, you know, everybody wrote them off. I said, there's no way Big Ben can do it. Like, you know, he's like a 400-pound piece of meat out there.
With arms and legs.
They're not going to get him to in this playoffs. And he did. He still threw
in certain spots he was clutch. Clutch for them.
And that's just how good he was. You know,
I think it's the fact that he was for him to get through 18 years in this league, the way that he was Cam Newton before Cam Newton. You know, he's a big bodied quarterback. He took the hits. Constantly, year after year after year, and look at him. He's still was there. Look, the last couple of years, he hasn't been great. He had that elbow injury, was it last year or the year before, where that sort of basically shot him for the season. And it's now the league rules are a little bit more conducive to, you know, being a little bit more lenient on the quarterbacks. And you look at Cam Newton, his longevity hasn't lasted.
Well,
he's essentially done in the league, and he would have taken all the same hits as what Big Ben did.
Look at the two people. Look at the two people that were drafted before him in that 2004 draft, and they retired way before him. Eli Manning and Philip Rivers.
That's
they were
right.
in the same draft. They started the same year, and Big Ben surpassed all them. So yep. And went 11, which is interesting. Man, I'm just looking at the teams that would have. I mean, the Giants. Oh, that I mean, that still to me is the funniest, most infamous draft I've ever seen. Or
that's right. It's exactly. It's a fact. You know, somebody coming in and saying I'm not playing there. Like that's a bit rough, right?
Yeah. And looking at the picks and who had quarterbacks at the time. Ben could have went either to the Browns, the Lions, or the Falcons at that time. Crazy, hey?
Yep.
Anyway,
I think they would have been ruining that.
No, yeah. So same thing. First ballot Hall of Famer, friend of Tom Brady's too. That was my thing with do these guys do it? It happens in some sports, but do these guys do it on the same year or do they do it on different years? It doesn't make a difference, but friends with Tom Brady. He would know going in that. Into that NFL Hall of Fame, that the whole spotlight's going to be on Tom Brady in 2027. Everybody would know that.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Look,
Big Ben would probably have maybe one or two more Super Bowls if they didn't have to go through, you know, through the AFC and through New England. The same with Peyton Manning.
Yeah, and that's right. See, that's the other thing that little people don't think of Ben. Like, he got them Super Bowls over the Pats during the Tom Brady's career. He got them Super Bowls, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So yeah, I've always liked him. Anyone going to go to that team now is with Mike Tomlin and that team now is still a legit contender. They just are. They've got a great wide receiver core. They have a very young running back. I really like that Steelers team. It's just that Ben was just, you know, unfortunately at the end of his career.
They need to do exactly what I think the Cincinnati Bengals should do in this next draft. The Cincinnati Bengals should absolutely, with all of their draft picks that they have, is draft offensive linemen.
Well,
every single draft pick. And the same thing, the Pittsburgh Steelers should do exactly the same thing.
You're the king of segue, so let's segue straight into that game then. The AFC Championship game, the Bengals. You are the king of segues. The Bengals beat the Chiefs 27-24.
It's the most strangest phrase or sentence that anyone would have uttered already this year, like in this calendar year, that the Cincinnati Bengals are going to play in Super Bowl 56.
Against the LA Rams. That both of them. It just sounds weird. Together. It's going to be a fun game, but it's funny. I was perplexed. You just mentioned about having the offensive line of the Bengals. I was perplexed that they only sacked Joe Burrow once in this game. He scrambled phenomenally well, and they have a
very good...
Very good team. The quarterback actual hits were only four in that entire game. So, he scrambled very, very well.
I thought that's probably one of the better games that front line would have played for Joe Burrow. While Joe Burrow was able to escape the pocket when needed, but they actually did fairly well against against the front four and against a Kansas City defense that's been playing, you know, so much better in the second half of the season.
Correct.
And for them to be able to sort of hold them at bay, you know, for enough time for Joe Burrow to do what he needed to do in that game. And also to be able to block fairly well for Joe Mixon, because that is a huge reason why they did what they did against Cincinnati was the great play of Joe Mixon.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, he's a stout fellow anyway, but he blocked very well for Burrow. He blocked very, very well for Burrow. I love seeing like the running backs or your wide receivers. Like Jamar Chase was blocking for Burrow. Did you see that when Mixon was trying to get?
No, yeah, actually, it's yeah.
It was yeah. It's I like it. It looks cool. Like it's just only because they're like 5'10" and have to put all that 200-pound muscle into it just to try to block these 300 pounds.
They were behind the eight ball. Like they were behind the eight ball from the start. They lost CJ Uzoma in the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati.
He's been great for them all year.
He's been massive. He's a sneaky chance of playing in the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. So
yeah,
you know, I think a lot of people are writing him off, but there's still a sneaky chance that he could play. Kansas City were scoring at will. Like they were doing whatever they wanted. Yeah, against Cincinnati offensively. Tyreek Hill basically was a tale of two halves, had seven catches for 78 yards in the first half. And you look at the Bengals wide receiver, yeah, well, their number one wide receiver, Jamar Chase had two catches for 8 yards
mm-hmm.
in the first mm-hmm. half. So yeah. It was a total reversal of fortune come the second half, but it was just, I think it was just a matter. And look, don't write off what Cincinnati did defensively inside that final, or you know, offensively inside the 2 minute warning of the first half. You know, the Perine touchdown was massive. Kansas City march all the way down the field. They get all the way into the red zone, and they've used all their timeouts. They're trying. I think they got a little bit too cute, a little bit too fancy, and apparently Mahomes didn't realize that they didn't have one more timeout left when they tried that sort of lateral pass to Tyreek Hill behind the line of scrimmage, which essentially ended the half. They should have really gone into the half at 24-10.
That it's funny you say that play because that's the next thing I was
that there it is a huge reversal of fortune for what happened if they punch over another field goal like that's what I mean that's a huge deficit, two touchdown deficit at halftime.
It's funny you say that because that's exactly what I had as a big turning point of the game is that.
Massive.
Mahomes wasn't sure. There was a quick pass incomplete, short right to Tyreek Hill. I just found it, and it's very serendipitous, but it's funny. Did you see the time when that happened? The actual time on the clock?
13 seconds?
Correct. So it was 13 seconds that the turning point of them losing the game, because of the last week before, it was 13 seconds all they needed to win the game. It's very serendipitous. So. That was to me the turning point. They have a field goal there.
They would have went in. They would have went into the half, with a whole lot more confidence.
Or 24-10.
They would have done
24-10
if they were down 24-10 to be able to stop them, which is something that they're having trouble doing, and a lot of teams have been having trouble doing is stopping the Kansas City Chiefs, especially in the red zone. But it was a mistake by Mahomes thinking that they still had a timeout. That's why he went for the cutesy play to go for that lateral to the left, and Tyreek Hill got blown up, and that essentially ended the half.
It was definitely the turning point of the game, because if they go in 24-10, essentially they get 11 points in the third quarter Cincinnati, but they still would have been a touchdown behind, so they would have had to go for a touchdown to the 3 points. So
they took an early field goal there in the third quarter, but the thing that set up the touchdown and the 2-point conversion was the interception by BJ Hill, the offensive lineman. He just stuck his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
The ball tipped up and went straight to him. I think there was still like a bit more than 2 minutes left to go in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And yeah, that there again is another game changer. Yeah, they get the Jamar Chase touchdown, you know, in the back left hand corner of the end zone. They get the 2-point conversion. That tied the game, and look, to be perfectly honest, I think that Kansas City at halftime, I think were absolutely was there a little bit of arrogance in it? Maybe complacency? Absolutely.
Complacency.
Because they marched all over that field in the first half, and when it became time to put the foot back on the gas again. They couldn't do it.
Yeah. I think more complacency than anything. That's how what I felt.
I think complacency. I think there's a little bit of arrogance in there as well.
Well, you could probably tie both of them into it, to be completely honest, I would say. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Cincinnati, they
must have just thought that, you know, even though that they stopped them on the goal line, I just think that they, we've done so well, and our offense has been so complete now, in this first half, that Cincinnati are just going to roll over and die. And they didn't do that.
And our best player will win us the game, Evan McPherson. So, that dude is just straight, like, he hasn't missed 21 now, 20, I think it's 20, was it 20, or 12, no, 12, sorry, 20, wow. 12 field goals in postseason. He hasn't missed one yet.
And he's only missed, I think, and his accuracy is right up there, and he's only missed, like, one all year past 50 yards.
Which begs the question now, he was drafted in the fifth round. What I'm saying is kickers don't get drafted generally in any rounds. They usually go to practice squads and then they try it and they pick them up. Maybe you've got to look, if there's a kicker out there and he's good like this kid, maybe you draft him instead of wasting it on something else. If you need a kicker, of course.
No, that's right. It's all based on team and need. So, yeah, like you said, if they're there and you think that they're a can't miss, if you think that they're going to be along the lines of a Butker or if they've got longevity like Chris Boswell or who am I thinking of? Or Mason
Tucker.
Crosby or somebody
Tucker.
Like that.
Yeah.
Justin Tucker, if you think that they're going to be, kickers can kick well and, you know, can play well into the latter part of the thing. We can just have a look at Matt Prater. So, you know,
I completely agree. This kid's 22.
Gostkowski, like he kicked into his 40s. So
this kid's 22. He could be in the league for, like you just said it then, probably he could be in the league for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
not out of the realms of possibility, and that's a lot more common than what it is for, you know, say, you know, for any other offensive player, really.
But it's more the confidence, and then obviously the what's the word I'm looking for, the calmness to, you know, to
that's right.
Now
yeah.
The second time he's had boys. To win a game as a 22-year-old rookie. It's not like Joe Burrow had to put him in the game. He had to win him the game. He had to win him the game.
No, that's right, exactly. It's a bit of deja vu as well too, like with this game and the game that was played in week 17 in Cincinnati. Kansas City had a big lead there. They end up coming back. Funnily enough, Kansas City only scored 3 points in the second half in this game. Mm-hmm. In that game in week 17, they only scored 3 points in the second half. So it's. I'm not sure, you know, really what to sort of think about that.
Their defense just made stops, and they did in this game. They make stops. They sacked Mahomes 4 times. They disrupted him, and they got 2 interceptions, 2 key interceptions.
That Von Bell interception, obviously in overtime was massive.
Yeah.
That game could have ended before overtime with Mahomes scrambling around on that third and goal. Do you know what I mean? And the fumble and the recovery by, I think it was Tunley that got it back.
For this person, I couldn't work it out. For this person that had Mahomes to get over 28 yards, I was just, I kept yelling at the screen, stop scrambling and just run for the line.
Run forward.
So more yards. And he's done it before.
He would have had time.
He run forward. Don't run backwards. Yeah, his fourth quarter collapse
It was a second half collapse. He had like a passer rating of like 9 in the second half.
Yeah.
Through 2 interceptions. He was like 9 of 20 in the second half. Like he was pretty ordinary in the second half and overtime.
Perplexing, but if I'm looking at those AFC quarterbacks, I'd still take him over Burrow. This is just
of course
Burrow end
and look,
up.
You can't like the Von Bell interception in overtime is not really on Patrick Mahomes, because that hit Tyreek Hill right where he should catch it, right in the hands. And I think there's been a few times this year where Tyreek Hill's hands have let him down, and no more costly than this instance. So what? Yeah, as we sort of ramble on a little bit too. Look, I said to you, I had a very simple, something that I was listening to today, a very simple game plan that I think would have won Kansas City the game. And it's not flashy. It's the same problem that happened to them at the start of the season. They started to feel themselves throughout the back end of this season. The flash is back, right? So we're getting a little bit of swagger back. This is the playoffs. You just have to do what you need to do to get the W. So from what Cincinnati had shown Kansas City in defensive wise, they were only putting three defensive linemen up front. So it was like, what they call it, they say is it's a shell cover two. So they drop back two safeties. Your corners come up a little bit, but they were trying to flood that middle and basically say to Mahomes, take what we give you. We're not going to give you the deep pass. Take what we give you. Now, you have a look down the box score and you see what Kansas City's running backs were doing. They were making really good yards. Average of nearly six yards a carry. You continue to do that, especially if Cincinnati are only rushing three up front, then you just play the run game. Why the hell did you draft Edwards-Helaire in the first round if you're not going to use him?
Well, look what happened in this game. Look what happened in this game.
They were getting 6 yards a carry out of him.
He got injured.
Thump him up the middle. They're only rushing three up front.
They picked up Jerick McKinnon, and Jerick McKinnon had another good game. I didn't continue to use him. They used Jerick. They did use Jerick in this game.
Yeah, but they didn't. This is the thing. You were up 21 to 10. They've essentially done what Atlanta did.
Yeah. Just run the ball. Yeah,
Keep the ball away from Cincinnati. Don't give them any time in possession. Keep the ball in your hands. Hand the ball off.
Well, it's simple, isn't it? That's what happened in Atlanta. We mentioned it before.
I don't know who that's on. Is that on Bieniemy? Is that on Andy Reid?
Has to be.
But that's what you do to win the game.
But look what happened. Same thing happened in Atlanta. Atlanta did exactly the same thing. We mentioned it before against the Pats. All they had to do was run and run and run, and they would have won that Super Bowl.
The thing was, they were getting such good production out of their running backs as well. Why go away from that?
Yeah, I don't get the whole Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing. That's a mystery to me. You drafted him first round. Is he just not good? It's a weird one.
I have no idea. I just don't think that's the kind of offense that they like to run the ball. It's not flashy. It's a flashy offense.
Well, this is true. Mahomes does like the flashy passes, but so
that's right. But this isn't the super flash to get to the super flash or the flash bowl. You don't get style points. You get points on the ball for scoring touchdowns.
Yeah. No, you're right.
You've got to go out there and they've got to be. I think they could have been a little bit smarter in their offensive play in the second half.
How much do you know about his brother, Jackson Mahomes?
I know that he's absolutely riding on the coattails of Patrick. Riding the coattails on his stupid little TikTok dances or whatever the F he does.
With his $1 million followers and his TikTok dances. You're right. He is absolutely riding on the coattails. No one in the NFL, like, they were rooting for Joe Burrow specifically because
they all hate him
because they hate him. He just does these stupid dances.
Obvious and overt that you're just cashing in on your brother, like that. That's pathetic to me.
It is pathetic. I mean, maybe he's doing it just to get people to goad him into doing stuff, but there was a Washington football team. This is going way back, but he had a cordon off area. I'm trying to think of the really good player that they had. They had a cordon off area for Sean Taylor. You remember Sean Taylor?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the 20, number 21, Sean Taylor. They had a cordon off area, like had his logo on the field, and they cordon off area. And this Mahomes kid danced on the actual logo. And then infuriated everybody. And then just because it come up again. And then every tweet kept saying, yeah, dear Joe Burrow, free us from seeing Jackson Mahomes and his fiance perform their antics once more. Regards, everybody. So he danced.
That's dancing, is it?
Well, but apparently the whole TikTok. I mean, I'm not on TikTok. No, you're not on TikTok. I know we know one person on TikTok, which is ridiculous, but that's a whole different.
Yeah, they're just. I don't know. Good for a bit of a laugh, but I'm not going actively seeking out TikTok videos. So, yeah, that's stupid, but that's just me.
But congratulations, Bengals. Good win. We'll be very, man, this has got to be an offensive minded game with, you know, the other team that they're playing, and that's a lot. LA Rams beating the 49ers. God, it's going to be offensive. Holy hell.
Yeah, that's right. Look, I think it's a matchup of sort of two fairly young coaches too. Like Zach Taylor's only 38, McVay's only 36. And this is his second Super Bowl that he's made in five years. So, you know, he's the wonder kid. I think there is so much more pressure on the LA Rams in the Super Bowl. They made the trades that they did, you know, mortgage the future, you know, for the present now, you know, that they've got Odell Beckham there, that they obviously, you know, made the big trade to ship Jared Goff off,
Miller. They also gave away a first for Von Miller too. Don't forget Von Miller.
No, that's right. That's right. They have absolutely mortgaged the future for right now. So it would be a massive disappointment if they didn't get the job done in the Super Bowl. And this is going to be a red hot game. And look, the game that they had against the 49ers, man, that crowd, it was 50-50. Both teams had to go silent count multiple times in that game because of the crowd.
It felt like, and someone mentioned this, it felt like a football game or soccer game, however you want to put it, depending on what you follow. But it felt like a 50-50 crowd. I mean, maybe not in a Manchester United, Man City thing, but it felt like a 50-50 crowd that just, it seemed loud the whole time because there was no quieting down periods, obviously, because
something
it was
like,
50-50.
Yeah, something like an FA Cup or something like that. Yeah. Where it's basically a 50-50 crowd.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, no, it was terrific.
The atmosphere was awesome. Like it was ridiculous. It was going off. You couldn't think of like, I knew I was in so far, but I think in my head I just halfway lost that who was the home team again. It's just because of the noise.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be
so easy to get swept up in, where is this being played again? I'm not 100% sure if they didn't need to get the sponsor's name out there so many times, then, you know, you would absolutely forget that the game was played in LA.
The first half in general was it was fairly lackluster. Obviously the first quarter was completely blank, and the second quarter sort of pushed that up a little bit, but the first half itself was to me at least a little bit lackluster. Like it was okay. It just didn't have that, I guess, that offensive punch that I thought these two teams would bring, to be completely honest.
I think, you know, they said it on the broadcast that both teams looked a little nervous, you know, whether you didn't really want to lose the game in the first quarter, which is a little bit hard. But yeah, with the Stafford interception in the first quarter, especially them being in the red zone in a prime spot to get the first touchdown, was like, oh, don't tell me that, you know, this game is going to be won and lost. you know, not on great play, but it's going to be won and lost on mistakes. And that ended up being the result, you know, as we get towards the end of the game, that mistakes by both, you know, by both teams, but more so by San Francisco, but mistakes were the thing that actually won this game, and who could capitalize on them more.
Yeah, I don't even think it was actually – you're right. I think it was mistakes. I don't think it was specific coaching calls. I think both coaches were great. Like, it was actual mistakes that were made. I mean, there's one big key mistake, but we'll talk about that one later. I mean, it's obviously the turning point as well. And talking about turning points, that was the biggest one that we'll talk about later. But
no real team sort of got much purchase out of the run game. Which I thought, yeah, was a testament, I guess, to both defenses, which are pretty, you know, pretty ferocious in the way that their front four is on both, you know, on both sides of the ball. So
both defenses are absolutely scary.
If one team had got on top in the run game, I think it would have made this game a little bit more open. I think, the Rams had much of the lion's share of time and possession in that first half. I think it was essentially 2-1. I think it was like 19 minutes to 11 minutes. So they did a really good job of keeping the ball away from San Francisco, even though San Francisco were right in this game and were up.
It
10-7 and a half at the half. There was that final Matt Gay miss inside the final 2 minutes. And the Robbie Gould field goal right on halftime, essentially a 6-point swing. Mm. You know, that was only a 44-yarder that Matt Gay missed. I think he just I'm not sure what happened on that field goal. He just whether he duffed his foot, it was off to the right. It was well short. You know, for somebody the likes of Matt Gay, who's a pretty damn good kicker, for him to miss so badly. I was like, oh, all right, yeah. Once again, that's a mistake.
That's a big mistake. From that, I thought going into that half, I thought, oh, that's a bit of a coast killer. It might be a little bit deflating. Mm. I mean, luckily they didn't, and you know, essentially didn't win the game, but essentially he got them to a point to win the game.
That's right.
But you're right. I thought the same thing. I. For the amount of possession they had in that first half, I was perplexed that the 49ers were 10-7. And McVay, that for a whole first half, he sort of looked a little bit better later. But goddamn, he looked nervous in that first half. He didn't look like his whole
in that second quarter. I think it was Aiyuk's second catch or third catch in the quarter. McVay should have been absolutely wiped out on the sideline. You know, you've got the little white patches where everybody really should be off that. McVay is nearly on the field.
Yeah, he loves
and
the field.
And there's a whole lot of yards after the catch. Brandon Aiyuk should have just wiped him out. He should have just wiped him out. It's just like, get off the field. He's done that on purpose to try and put him off.
He does it all the time.
Aiyuk should have just wiped him out.
Should have wiped him out. I agree.
Be like, sorry, you were in the passing. Yeah, you were right there. You're in the white part on the field that nobody should be on.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's funny. It's a weird game that, like, I don't know about it for you, but it's weird for the fact that those things don't get called. Like in basketball, they can get called for, well, if it gets over the top and get called for a tech. This, it doesn't make a difference if they're on the field or not.
And that's the thing. The coaches also, you know, that little line that they have just before where the scorers table is as well. Realistically, the coaches aren't meant to go past that either.
No, that's exactly right. For most part, they get pings, but it doesn't happen in this game. Like him running down all those antics he was doing in the other games, running down to congratulate, you know, touchdown. That's ridiculous.
It's antics.
But it's antics. You know, that's still ridiculous. Look, fast forward the second half. I don't know about you, but the biggest crucial turning point was clearly that Jawiski Tartt's dropped interception. That was like an absolute sitter to him.
An absolute sitter.
It was 17-14.
Straight
in
to
a fourth quarter, in a, just under 10 minutes to go. It literally was in his arms. And, you know, he's not, he owned it. He said, there's no excuses. I dropped it. It is what it is kind of thing.
The pass by Stafford was so underthrown.
Oh my God!
And it's almost as if sometimes it's too much time to think about it, because he had that lined up. He had it ready to go. All he's got to do is catch it.
Stafford was just through a desperation heave basically, and it just landed. I wouldn't say softly in his arms like I've read reports. He still had to catch it. No, one of those balls coming to you, they're not soft coming to you. They're still coming to you like a rocket. So. But it was the turning point for them. Like if they get that interception at 17-14 with 10 minutes, that's a huge turning point.
That's right. And that would have been a huge momentum killer as well, because early in the fourth quarter, they had the Cooper Kupp touchdown. I thought after that, the LA Rams defense just got an extra spring in their step. Like their tenacity in that fourth quarter, especially trailing the game at 17-7, once Cooper Kupp got the touchdown, make it 17-14, that really got the LA Rams defense, their tails in the air. They had so much energy just to try and stop, to try and, get that, not so much that knockout defensive blow to get the ball back into Stafford's hands. And for that pass to go down like that interception not to be caught. Is a gigantic game changer. If that happens, San Francisco have got the game in their hands right there. You know that they control their own destiny, but it's a massive drop. And the funny thing was, after that drop, the very next play cost the Rams 45 yards.
That's right.
So Odell Beckham Jr. gets the catch for 30 yards. I can't remember who the defensive back that come along and just basically had, turned himself into a torpedo and while OBJ was on the ground.
That was a dumb penalty.
Oh, it was so dumb. That got them into prime position.
That just made no sense, did it? That penalty.
It was stupid.
It was Jimmy Ward. It was unnecessary rough.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was too.
Yeah, it was Jimmy Ward. The dropped interception. Shanahan came out obviously post conference and said, there was a lot of other mistakes. That wasn't the only mistake in the game. He was one of their best players on the field, which is probably half true. Their corners were pretty good, and Jimmy Ward even came over to him and said, just catch the next one. Doesn't matter about that one. So.
That's the thing. It's just those little mistakes that creep into the game, and then when you look at the game as a whole and you look at it in hindsight, they're gigantic mistakes.
They are, and I think he's only 22. Unfortunately, of course you're probably going to get the dickhead trolls, but he's going to be thinking that until the next season. That's just the way it's going to be, it is what it is. It shouldn't define him in that game, because the game was exciting. Like the crowd was obviously, the atmosphere was, obviously both games had crowd atmosphere, but that atmosphere was better than
insane.
Bengals Chiefs one.
If somebody along the lines of Marcus Williams can overcome, his bonehead play in the wild card game with the Saints and Minnesota, basically led in the Minnesota miracle. And look, I'm just saying, that's a total bonehead play.
No, I know,
if
but
he
I
can
just
come back
it.
From that and be much better for it, then Tart can do exactly the same thing. He would have dwelled on that all off season.
I just knew that it was half coming.
He's gonna dwell on that. He's only a young player. Marcus Williams was only a rookie in that 2017 season.
No, it's just the whole.
You can absolutely put that behind you and come back a better player.
Hey, great. Yeah, just you bring out the Minnesota Miracle again. I love it. We'll move on quickly.
It's the same. It's along the same sort of lines. That's a total bonehead play. Just catch the ball. I mean, there's a reason why he's a safety and not a wide receiver.
We could do 500 pods of NFL. You will never let that go.
Why should I?
No, you shouldn't. Odell had another good game. You know, 113 yards. He probably will stay there next year. They'll re-sign him, and I think he'll stay there next year. And I think it's smart for
him. He's gonna have to. He wants to get paid, right? You see, was it you that sent me the message of his pay structure this year?
Yeah.
But he's essentially playing this year for free.
They've also I don't know if he'll get paid because you got Cooper Kupp that was again dominating in this game, absolutely just unstoppable in this game.
Unstoppable.
And you've got a Robert Woods coming back who. You know, up until Kupp, you know, blew everybody out. Woods was a very wide receiver too, close to wide receiver one. So it's fine. I'm saying
he's very expendable for them.
I don't know if you've seen a lot of the post stuff, but the embrace that he had with Cooper Kupp, and they were both crying, and said they just both like said, you're family, like this. This is family, and you know, it's the emotion. It's going to the Super Bowl and everything like that. But I'm
trying to do an impression of like Fast and the Furious or something.
Yeah, basically. You know, so
it looks like it's all about family.
I'm pretty sure Robert Woods got into a Dodge car towards the end and just drove straight off SoFi Stadium. So it's all about family. I understand what you're saying. Like it's. He's expendable, but he's 29, so that's kind of he's in a weird sort of spot. I haven't looked at his contract off the top of my head. Oh no, they're not going to get rid of him. They only paid him last year 4 years, $65 million, with a guarantee, total guarantee $32 million, and he could be free agent in 2026. So he's not going anywhere at all.
I still think he can be expendable.
Like that only side
of trade. It's easy to trade away a contract.
It's literally this year. Yeah, but 10 to 15 for a 29-year-old who has torn ACL. I don't know.
Don't worry. There's going to be teams out there that are going to take a flyer on him. And there's two teams with actual horrendous wide receiver cores.
Well, this is true.
That would absolutely take a flyer on him. That's Detroit and New Orleans.
This is true. They would take. Would you think Odell could go to one of those two? I don't think he'd go to Detroit, but could he go to New Orleans? Ooh, would you want OBJ at New Orleans?
I mean, possibly. I'm sure he'd have a way of a time on Bourbon Street.
With all the crap that were happening with him, he's not
giving up that La La Land lifestyle. Yeah, give me a break.
Probably not. So Rams, Bengals, Super Bowl. We'll name our studs and duds of the week. Go ahead, your start of the week.
Look, start of the week isn't a real flashy. It's not a flashy call. It's not a flashy big name. But I thought that the backup tight end for the LA Rams, Kendall Blanton, was huge for them in the absence of Tyler Higbee.
Yeah.
So his season statistics all year, 4 catches. 37 yards all year.
Yeah.
This game, 5 targets, 5 catches, 57 yards.
Yeah.
He was huge for LA in this game, especially stepping into that spot. You know, Tyler Higbee went off. And again, he could still be a sneaky chance of playing the Super Bowl as well, even though he limped off. Yeah. And it looked like it was a fairly nasty knee injury. Same with Azuma for Cincinnati. But still a sneaky chance of playing, but I thought he was massive coming in there and just doing his job, that next man up mentality, filling in for a pretty good. He's been pretty good for LA this year, Tyler Higbee. So
Tyler Higbee has been really good
to be trusted and to go in there and do the job, I thought was massive.
I had him down as well, funnily enough, because he is an undrafted rookie that they picked up. 6'6", which is a beast of a size, 6'6", 262 pounds. So, and you can see that.
Yeah, he was a big body. He's absolutely a big body.
And 26-year-old. So this is his first actual season undrafted, 26-year-old. So, amazing story. I completely agree. I think he will be there. That body, he's a massive dude. Like his blocking was great. I don't know if you've seen a few of them.
That game, this postseason, could absolutely get him paid over the next few years.
I just, oh, wow,
absolutely get him paid.
Dud of the week.
Look, I don't want to heap everything on Jimmy Garoppolo, but just that final play. It was only on third down. It wasn't if it was a fourth down. I know he was trying to avoid, you know, taking the sack and dropping another 8 or 9 yards because they're already backed up to their own end zone. But that's a monumental mistake towards the end. Even his past two drives in that game, they went nowhere. I think his offensive line were getting a little bit gassed because just so much energy would have been sapped out of them in that fourth quarter by the LA Rams and how well they were playing defensively. And they just couldn't protect anymore. Jimmy G, I think out of the seven offensive plays that he had in his final two drives, he scrambled six of them.
Yeah.
They couldn't protect for him at the end of the game. And look, that's not his fault, but that backhanded flick, you know,
to
try and offload the ball, you just got to eat the sack there, and you've got to go for a fourth and 14 or 15.
Unless he wasn't looking at the
trying to save those yards, you cannot do that.
Unless he wasn't looking at the field and he thought it might have been a safety, but you can't do that. Yeah, you're right. He shouldn't have done that. I mean, heat of the moment, everything like that. But
that could be what he's remembered for as his last play in the San Francisco 49ers jersey.
I went the other quarterback of the losing teams. I had to go Mahomes. It was similar, but that whole end of the fourth quarter and then the interception that he threw to
one mistake is all it takes in a playoff
in 14 seconds. Three plays, 14 seconds, 0 yards, intercept by Von Bell.
Interception, that's right.
He didn't have a Patrick Mahomes game. I mean, he just didn't. It's terrible to say about him because everyone knows how good he is.
First half.
He had a Patrick Mahomes first half, but that's it. So, that fourth quarter, that overtime collapse was just, I couldn't go past it.
I heard on ESPN radio, I think it was the day after, I think it was on that Monday morning, Keyshawn Johnson, who's on one of the early morning radio shows, he sort of come out and said he could see a scenario where Kansas City don't even make another Super Bowl. It's like, well, hold the phone. Like, let's not overreact too much on what's just happened. Like, they've just made four straight AFC championship games. And who's to say that's their run over? But to say that they're not going to be in this position again is a little far fetched.
Mm. Yeah, no, you're right.
They've got the ultimate recruiting machine there in Patrick Mahomes.
Oh,
even if they do lose the likes of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and those guys like that, there's going to be wide receivers and tight ends that are going to want to go there.
I don't care what anyone says. I'm that is a team that people will want to play for. I don't
Absolutely.
Care.
It's a quarterback that people will want to play with.
It's bogus.
No, it's just such a gigantic overreaction, and that's just typical Keyshawn Johnson. Like he can't help himself. He's almost like Kendrick Perkins or Paul Pierce in the NBA. He just flaps his gums and stupid crap comes out his mouth that is just total overreaction to stuff like that, and he sounds like a moron.
You're right. I totally agree with that. Just moving on some news now. So this will be very coach-centric, our news. So, I mean, we'll go through that coaching carousel before the big other news of a coach, but you've got some coaching, I guess some hiring / more interviews.
There's the high profile interview that's going to be happening shortly, and that's Jim Harbaugh. It looks like he's being flown into Minneapolis to have an interview with the Vikings
tomorrow.
Funnily enough,
he's interviewing tomorrow, so that's he's the latest one out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 10 people that they've interviewed. So
they've been lining them up.
Yeah, they have.
Funnily enough, just things that I'd heard about that too, that Jim Harbaugh was one of the lowest paid coaches in the Big Ten, which is really bizarre because he was a highly touted sort of coach when he first went to Michigan and he took a bit of a salary cut over the last few years and actually finally got the Wolverines to the college football playoff and obviously they got the crap kicked out of them by Georgia, but that's what it is. But mm-hmm. for him to get sort of flown in, I think it's either him to Minnesota. There's some rumors floating around that the Dolphins are a sneaky chance of actually getting Jim Harbaugh as well. But it looks like that all signs are pointing to him as the Vikings' next head coach.
Good. Makes sense. He is very offensively run. It is Michigan. And doesn't mean it has to be like that, but his Michigan Wolverines team is very offensively run in terms of a running back offensive centric, so to speak. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. Got it out of all of them, just looking at it, the Vikings interview the most out of every team by a long shot. I know then equal with Jacksonville Jaguars, which makes sense. That one makes sense. The other one doesn't make sense. So you think he'll go there? That's sort of your guess or your.
I still think there's some validity to him going to the Dolphins as well. Apparently they've been chasing him for a long, long time, even when he was still in the NFL coaching the Niners. So, I would think don't discount the Dolphins. I think he'll hear both. I think he'll interview for them as well. I don't think he's just going to get jumped straight at the Vikings job. Whether or not, which team that he would rather coach, whether he would rather coach a younger quarterback in Tua or have himself one year of a pretty damn good offense in what they've got in Minnesota with Kirk Cousins and Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson, the likes of those. And then sort of, maybe dip into the market the year after and try and get themselves a quarterback. So I'm not sure what's the better situation for him to coach at. I think that's a really interesting decision for him to make.
What do you think about Doug Peterson? So the last two places he's interviewed were your New Orleans Saints on the 30th of January. And then tomorrow, it would have been today. I haven't looked at it, but it's today. The Jacksonville Jaguars. So,
look, a good offensive-minded coach. So, look, I don't mind the interview for both of those. He's been out of the game for a little bit. So, was it been two years? 2 years now, I think he's been out. So, I'd like to see him. Even if he's getting interviews now, he could even be a coordinator somewhere.
I don't mind your Saints. I think that's not too bad, to be completely honest. Because
I think it could be a really good hire for the Saints.
Because looking at the they went after they interviewed Brian Flores first, so that would have been our time. It would have been, I guess, today technically Brian Flores, and they've requested an interview with Brian Leftwich, the offensive coordinator with the Bucs. But other than that, the only big stand is Doug Peterson. So
no, that's right. Yeah, I think they've absolutely got it narrowed down. They're not sort of being a machine gun and just like spraying the area with bullets and getting a million people to come in and do interviews. I think they've got their mind set on who they want to come in there and coach. So I think Brian Leftwich would be a pretty good hire as well. He's been in that system now for a couple of years at Tampa. So Yeah, either Doug Peterson or Leftwich, I think, would be an amazing hire for New Orleans.
Some head coaches that
even Brian Flores. Like the only problem with the Flores hiring there is he's a defensive minded coach. That means they'd have to do a bit of a reshuffle with the OC there.
If you really look at it, but that's more. I always thought Sean Payton was more defensive minded than offensive minded, but that was my. That's what I thought.
No, Sean Payton is much. He's absolutely the play caller.
I get that, but I felt like he few, he'd come across as more defensive, in my estimation.
Dennis Allen, you know, he's been there for a few years now. He's been the stalwart of that that defensive core there in New Orleans.
Some coaching horrors that did happen. Matt Eberflus he was the defensive coordinator from the Indianapolis Colts, is now the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
He's got a tough job ahead of him.
Well, him and Ryan Poles, who is the new GM for the Chicago Bears, that whole team.
Yeah, that's right.
He was the Kansas City Chiefs executive director, so that'll be, tough team to. Well, yeah, it's pressure cooker straight away, especially with Justin Fields.
Oh, absolutely.
You're gonna have to get in there straight away. The Denver Broncos hired Nathaniel Hackett, who is was the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers.
I guess throwing the fishing line out there to try and get Aaron Rodgers to come to the Mile High City, I guess.
Brian DeBell, and we'll mention this name later, but he's been hired as the new head coach of the New York Giants. He was the Bills offensive coordinator for two seasons. So
The Giants absolutely went Buffalo Bill poaching. So, you know, they got Brian Daboll there as their head coach.
They got Joe Schoen.
And, they picked up the assistant GM in Joe Schoen as well as their GM. So the Bills are on the back foot straight away, you know, when it comes to, I guess, you know, finding another offensive coordinator and you know, somebody to help out the GM there in a season where all they'll be doing is trying to find a way to beat Kansas City. The New York Giants have come and sort of poached a few, I guess, sort of key guys there to get their organization off a much better start, because the New York Giants have been a bit of a disaster over the last 4 or 5 years. So they need to sort of right the ship quickly New York, and it's not even New York really. It's, you could still live in New York and play, you know, where they play in Jersey across the river, but it's both New York teams aren't really a desired destination for people. So that they need to turn that around. Both New York teams do.
And the last one, it's probably the biggest one, but Las Vegas have hired Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels.
A massive hire.
Also, the general manager, Dave Ziegler, was a former Patriot as well. So
That's right. Yeah, they're getting the Patriot ties there. So
finally, Josh McDaniels gets his, you know, head coach, not the one he wanted. I think he wanted Belichick's one, but it didn't seem like that was going to happen. But he's finally getting his first head coaching gig to see what he can do. I mean, obviously, he's got some Super Bowls, and you know. Yeah, you had Belichick get him, you had Brady get him, but you'd also have, you know, Brady raves about Josh McDaniels. So it'll be...
Well, there was the big fiasco surrounding him a couple of years ago in taking the Indianapolis job, and he turned it down. It was basically there until he wasn't, and then they got Frank Reich. So, that's a big get for Vegas.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks for Rich Bisacci. Who was the interim coach?
He's been taking interviews,
so he's not totally out of it. But yeah, I think that totally sucks for him to not be able to be given, you know, maybe even if it's just a 1 year extension, you know, 1 year shot at being the head coach, just to see what he can do, because the Raiders really rallied around him and had a really good end to the season with him as the head coach.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think he'll be okay. I mean, that's probably out of all those, they're probably the funnest, most, I don't know if ready team, but they're close to being ready team. And Derek Carr had a good season. I know what people think of Derek Carr, but I'd like him. He's still only 30 years old.
Oh, he has got plenty of years left in those legs, Derek Carr.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I guess to finish on, you know, speaking of coaches, we mentioned this guy before, and this is all news that's pretty much just sort of come to light. Brian Flores, former Miami head coach, is suing now the NFL and three teams alleging racism in hiring practices.
Yeah, I guess he's bringing into question the Rooney Rule. Which was sort of brought in so that they had to have a certain percentage of minority coaches in the league, and
wasn't a percentage. So basically, all they had to do was interview at least one minority.
That's right. They had to give minority coaches at least the chance. They didn't have to hire them, but yeah, and he's basically just come out and just, you know, trying to, you know, take an absolute flamethrower to the league and saying that they're all just sham interviews and things like that. Oh, look, I genuinely think he had a really good shot of getting a head coaching job this off season. He's just totally come out and just trying to lay waste to the NFL and what's happening at the moment.
What's interesting about this whole thing is firstly, you said it right. We said this when he got fired. It was a perplexing firing because he got them into a whisker of making the wild cards. I don't get it. Did come out, obviously, was in this lawsuit that the Dolphins owner offered him $100,000 per loss to help with the team's draft, which is perplexing in itself. And then
got to do what you got to do.
And then the whole texting, accidental texting between him and Bill Belichick, who thought he was congratulating.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. That one, I think Belichick. Look, a lot of the stuff that he does is calculated, but I honestly think he made a big stuff up.
I just think Belichick's old, and he didn't read the name he was texting to, and that's just an age thing on a mobile device, and he texted to Flores congratulating him that he heard from Buffalo in New York that you are their guy, and then Flores asked him to clarify what he meant by it. I asked him to clarify whether he was meant to talk to Brian Dobell or not, and then he goes, oh, sorry, I effed up, I double checked and misread the text, I think they're naming Brian Dobell, sorry about that.
I think that is an absolute genuine mistake by Belichick.
I don't know if it's about you, but essentially, and it still could be possible, but to me, at the end of the day, essentially he's giving up his entire coaching career. At the end of the day, you'd have to.
Doing this to the league, and that's the thing. It's not. Look, Roger Goodell is the commissioner, he basically works for the owners, right? The 29 owners, and then obviously you've got the Green Bay Packers situation, they got a whole bunch of owners, but it. For him to sort of come out, I don't know what that means. I'm suing the NFL. Like, the NFL aren't the ones that are hiring coaches. He's got to go after owners. Like, you've got to go. The owners are the ones that make these decisions.
Which he has. He's gone after the three teams: the Miami Dolphins, the Denver Broncos, and the New York Giants. So he has gone after three teams.
But surely he's got to go blanket wide if he thinks that all these interviews are a total
sham. Well, he has. It's a big 53-page, which I don't know how they come up with these 53-page documents, and it's ridiculous. But he's basically,
And this would have this is what he would have been doing with his legal team over the last couple of weeks. He's putting this together.
It's not even so much that he doesn't care if he wins. Well, he doesn't, but. He goes, among the areas Flores said he'd like to see addresses, increase influence of black individuals in hiring, increase the objectivity of hiring, terminating GMs, not black, just in general, increase the number of black coordinators, increase higher retention of black GMs, transparency of pay for GMs, which is never going to happen to head coaches and coordinators. I don't know, because I thought, because it was that he was tied to head coaching in the Texans and your Saints, so I thought he was in for the, well, not a shoe-in, but he was definitely in with a chance. So I
I still thought he was in with the, I think the best chance I think he was in with was Houston. That was I think that was one of the first interviews that he took.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought that I don't think it's a good fit with the Saints. But I generally thought that the Texans were going to be where he was going to land.
The thing is, if he loses, the whole thing with this is if he loses. Both ways. If he loses, he loses. If he wins, it's not going to make a difference.
He still loses.
Correct. That's just the way it's going to be.
That's just putting more fuel on the fire for the cause that he's trying to champion at the moment is to try and get minority/black head coaches, guys like that out there and to get them more opportunities. But he's essentially doing what Colin Kaepernick did. He's going to get blackballed.
He will,
so to speak.
No, blackballed slash
nobody's going to want to touch him. Nobody's going to want to touch him now.
No, it'll be blacklisted.
And that's really unfortunate.
The only thing it's not so much if it's all valid and it's all correct. I think
he's got at least got a lot of really good points and
that's right. Yeah, so
I'm sure there's a lot of under the table dirty deals that goes around in the NFL, but it's a business. And if the owners have an agenda on who they want to hire as their GM as their high powered positional people within the organization, then that's you're not going to be able to change that.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. You can't at the end. It's like a job as an example, because it is technically, well, it is a job. So you can't just decide. Unfortunately, you can't just say, well, I can't hire that person because I've got to hire a minority person to make up the disparity of what's going on.
Yeah, that's right.
At the end of the day, and let's look at Mike Tomlin, who is black and thriving. At the end of the day, you hire the best person for the job. Mike Tomlin was clearly the best person for Pittsburgh Steelers and has taken them to Super Bowls and is still has the best winning record, going through 13 seasons. So,
no, exactly.
He must have validity, like you just said, but I don't know how much it's actually going to change, because at the end of the day.
Maybe I'm just too naive. Yeah, maybe I'm just too naive on this point, but I would think that the powers that be over there would be hiring people on their merits anyway, and that's super naive on my part. But
I agree.
If you're qualified enough for the job, it doesn't matter whether your skin color is black, white, red, green. If you're an alien from another dimension, if you're qualified for the job, in my book, then you deserve the chance. But it's clearly not like that over there. I don't get it.
I agree.
That's just me in my own mind. Like that's all I'm saying.
I also believe if he was coming out with this, he's coming out of this. But if he wasn't coming out with this, I was under the fully understanding that of all the coaches that were being interviewed, he was the best candidate. So he would have got somewhere, I believe. I honestly believe Miami hired him for a reason. Raheem Morris, who's been interviewing a lot, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, who's black. He was a Ravens coach a fair few years ago before Harbour. Just didn't work out, but he's a phenomenal coach and will get a head coaching gig. McVay raves about it. Raves about it. So I'm fully.
He would have got another job.
I guarantee
he would have got another job.
He's not going to get it now. I guarantee.
He won't get it now. And that's the best person available. That's really unfortunate.
I believe they hire the best person available, and even if it, I'm not saying this, but even if it's bad skin color, they own the team. They can do technically what the hell they want. It's not great, but they can do what the hell they want.
No, that's right. And that's the shit part of it is that they're the billionaires. They've got the power in their own hands, and that's on them.
And the other thing I don't get is why I don't know if it really. They're saying coaches and all that, but some of these owners, or no, all of these owners pay black players hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's right.
So if they didn't want black coaches, as an example, they pay. Look at all of them. They pay hundreds of millions of dollars.
The league is like, what is it? 70%. It's almost like the NBA. It's like 75% black.
It's 75-25, correct. So 75% of players are getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars. So if they were not racist, but if they're so-called racist, they wouldn't be paying that. They just wouldn't. So especially defense. I don't care they go on. I used to go on with the Kaepernick about quarterbacks getting paid, black quarterbacks and everything like that. But the defensive left tackles, 99% of them are black, and 99% of them are the second highest paid in the team. So, because they've got to protect the quarterback, who's the biggest position. So,
that's your asset.
Yeah. So he might have validity and he might win. I just, unfortunately for him, you would think curtains on NFL, at least for him, you would think.
I mean, through the article now, like he's only 41, so he's got a lot of time for wounds to heal and for him to be able to be gainfully employed again in the future. But his immediate future right now is in serious jeopardy, and if he's going out there to champion a cause for this, then that's awesome. If there can be equity, you know, in these things in the NFL, then that's only good for the league. But until there's a mindset change in the owners, it just won't happen.
In
my heart of hearts, I would think that these high profile rich ass owners are going to go out there and employ the best possible person for the job.
That they think, because it's their money.
That's the way that it is over there at the moment. That's clearly not what's happening.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I tend to disagree with it, but they're giving away hundreds of millions of dollars in their organization and losing money, the value of it, if you don't hire the correct coach. So if you don't hire the correct coach, it doesn't matter of the coach. That's what I'm saying. So it might be a minority thing, but there just might be enough black coaches out there too. That's, you know, who we don't know. There might be enough black.
I mean, there's a lot more throughout the college system than what you would think. You do see, but that's, I mean, a lot of them too. A lot of the specialty type coaches, whether it's special teams or, you know, the defensive backs coach or the tight ends coach. Like, they've got that many coaches on the staff that it's ridiculous to start with. But it's all about getting the experience on actually managing the group as a whole, rather than just be a positional coach.
Yeah.
Which is totally different.
I think we'll be doing another NFL pod, and I think there's going to be more to this that's going to come out. This is
This will be a huge talking point over this off season, which will be a pretty crazy one, I think.
Yeah, off season is going to be absolutely insane. Between the quarterback carousel, the coach carousel, you may as well throw what's happening with Deshaun Watson in there, because that's still a little bit
up in the air. There's lots of things in the air.
And then half decent a lot of elite wide receivers on the market too. That's another big thing, because they all took 1 or 2 year contracts or franchise tags. So, yeah, this offseason is going to be insane. That's not including the draft.
Yeah, that's right. The draft. The draft is the end of April. Jesus. There's going to be some. I think there's going to be some game changing slash team, monumental shifts in the power balance in a lot of teams that are around at the moment. Yeah, have a look at the two high profile retirees that we've just had.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody knows what the hell's going to happen in those quarterback situations at Pittsburgh and in Tampa.
Well, we still don't even know what's happening in Washington with all the stuff that happened with them and the outlay from Gruden. So like that's still all up in the air too. It's just this off with Gruden, like the whole.
You're talking about Las Vegas.
No, yeah, but the whole when he was with Washington Football Team.
And the whole emails with that.
So like.
Yeah, with the owner and stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of off-field strife. I think the Washington.
I think the least of their worries
is calling themselves the Sentinels.
Well, there is just to finish on. You did see the It's not completely official, but the one that they've apparently put a trademark on.
Is the Commanders.
Commanders. So the Washington Commanders. Not bad, but it's not the Sentinels.
I mean, it's not the worst of the lot.
Well, that was a nice finish to this pod. And obviously during off season, obviously after we go over the Super Bowl, anything that happens breaking wise, we'll post on our Facebook page as always, which is Final Play Podcast. Because it's gonna be this off season. We might even do one halfway through just to sort of if there's enough information of quarterbacks and coaches and what the hell's going on before the draft. So.
No, that's true. It's going to be, I think there's going to be plenty of activity that's going to happen throughout this off season after the Super Bowl. So yeah, that'll be, loads. I think there's going to be loads to talk about.
Twitter as always is at Final Play Pod. And as always, a big shout out to Eureka Sports Cards or gimco.com.au for hosting our pods.
Check those guys out. They're on Spotify as well on the Gimco Podcast Network, so you can check those guys out there as well. Actually talking to Dom today. They have posted up their Super Bowl extravaganza break for the year. He said we'd give him a bit of a shout-out. So it's like, $150 per spot, but it's a massive break. Some really good stuff in there, especially from 2021. So there's already 12 spots been taken already. So check out those guys. So there's still 20 spots left. That's always I'll be definitely grabbing a spot in that. I've also got a spot in another Super Bowl break on West Oz cards as well. So yeah, it's just throwing the money around at the moment. But definitely check out on the Gimco website, GIMKO, and on Eureka Sports Cards. I'm pretty sure Dom has put that up on there, and it would have a link that you could just click on that will send you straight to the break where you can purchase your spot on there. So, still plenty of time, still 2 weeks into the – a little bit less than 2 weeks into the Super Bowl. So, there's plenty of opportunity to get in there. One of the prizes on that is a Trevor Lawrence signed jersey. So if you get a spot in that break, you get a 1 in 32 shot of getting a signed Trevor Lawrence jersey. So that's massive as well. So somebody's going to score that in that break as well. So it's all random. So 32 spots, and it's all randomized. So you don't actually buy your own team. It's all randomized. So you've got a chance of getting a decent team, and then a chance of scoring a Trevor Lawrence signed jersey. So that's massive.
So just to finish on Super Bowl, who are you going?
I think it's set up for the Rams to win, but I think it would sentimental value here. I think I'd like to see Cincinnati win it, but it's absolutely set up for the Rams to win it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Rams, but I find it funny just to finish on that they'll be. Because this is Super Bowl 56 and AFC teams get the even numbers. So this is LA Rams playing away, technically.
And it's funny, too, like two years in a row now that we've actually had the home team actually play in their own stadium for the Super Bowl. We know Tampa played at Raymond James Stadium last year and won it. And that had never happened before.
So just like last year.
Before last year.
Just like last year.
It's never gotten there.
No, just like last year, but the Bengals.
Yeah, it's 2 years in a row.
The Bengals and Chiefs, well, like last year, the Bengals will be able to pick which uniform that they get to wear first, and then the Rams just have to wear whatever. So they might go the white, and then they'll wear blue. But you never know. Might be psychological. So
I mean, that's how you do it. You want to make it as uncomfortable as humanly possible for the other team, but I don't think uniform colour is going to make too much of a difference.
Oh yeah, but I'm going Rams. So my name's Jason. And let's
those
go.
Those tickets will be insanely expensive.
Of course they will be. Well, they're probably
holy mackerel. So if you have a go, if you have a look on. So I'd say this would be from, I think it's SeatGeek. I think that the NFL have got a bit of a partnership with them and ESPN. So it's got tickets as low as $4,342.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good. Good value.
Oh, yeah, decent.
With the halftime show, that's phenomenal value.
Oh, my God. That halftime show is going to be fire.
So that's not bad. Fourth hour. Yeah, I'm not going to spend it, but...
I mean, 4,000, yeah, the 4,000 just to secure you, that's US, and that's just to secure yourself a ticket.
Then
you'd have to get yourself a flight. And could you imagine? It'd cost you $4,000 to stay in LA for the night.
Yeah, good point.
Well, would be, oh my God, all of the hotels there, holy mackerel. Like, if they weren't already expensive enough as it is, they are going to be insanely expensive to be able to purchase a hotel for that first Super Bowl Sunday night. Those ticket prices and the ticket prices are off the charts, but to be finding something, you know, in the city or, you know, even on the outskirts of LA, even the surrounding areas, I would think, you know, places like, you know, San Diego, where it's only a couple of hours down the track. It's that some of the hotel prices will be absolutely off the absolute chain. So if you're thinking about going to the Super Bowl, then be prepared to open up the wallet.
Well, Super Bowl,
it's the Super Bowl, so
halftime extravaganza. They're probably like those top boost alone will be just littered with celebrities. It's just going to be celebrity-a-thon. Oh,
it was like the game. Yeah, it was like the game this week. There was only a couple.
That was only a couple. There'll be heaps there trying to get.
The suites there would be ridiculously overpriced as it is. You imagine what they're going to be for the Super Bowl.
And then it's I don't know how that all works, but their owner, Stan Kroenke, is going to be licking his chops, saying, I've got all this money coming in. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, my God. They'd be making a fortune.
Yeah, of course they will. Well, that's it. My name's Jason. Let's go to Super Bowl 56, which will be, like we said, about a week and a half away, because there's a Pro Bowl in between, as always. So.
Yeah, look, and I don't think too many people are very excited about the Pro Bowl, but the Pro Bowl's in between there. It is what it is. It's in Vegas. Like, yeah, man, hasn't Vegas, you know, scoring themselves some stuff lately? Like, they've got the NHL All-Star Game as well. So, you know, they've got the Pro Bowl. So, yeah, they're doing all right for themselves. So, you know, I'm Miles. Let's go Vegas Plum. So it's
let's go Vegas. man, like,
look, they are absolutely cashing in on a sports market that wants to come to Las Vegas.
And the players, man, the players are gonna, that Pro Bowl players.
Oh my God, like that would just be so much temptation. Like, they don't call it Sin City for no reason.
Oh, it's gonna. There's, yeah. Speaking of money, Super Bowl, that was money gonna be flying around there too.
Oh my God, bookies the casinos would just be rubbing their hands together. Holy moly, everybody's so much cash. Oh my God, so much cash gonna be put on the Super Bowl this year.
Well, have a good week, everyone.
All right, see ya.